ओम ज्ञान चिनिरंधस्य ज्ञानंजन शलाके चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः.
Speech on the absolute truth. Who is the supreme absolute person? What is the relationship of the living beings with that absolute person? And particularly, how the conditioned souls can re-establish that relationship with the supreme absolute person, Krishna. Now, even though it's short, very much to the point, we find in this series of verses, Krishna has identified Arjuna's problem. Arjuna considers his problem to be that he would have to do something which he didn't want to do, but Krishna identified that the real problem is misidentification of the body with the self and everything else that comes along with that. That's the initial mistake, is to identify oneself as not a servant of Krishna. And that's where the problem begins, and it becomes complicated as Krishna is describing here. We have this enemy called lust. Arjuna has asked a very valid question, that we have our conscience. We feel we shouldn't do something which is wrong. Still we do it. Why is that? We're forced. Baladivamiyojita. As if forced, we do something which is wrong. Krishna explains that our enemy has overcome us. Avritam jnanametena. This word is used. Avriti. Again in this verse, avriti. We are covered. Covered over. In other words, the conscience is there, or the original desire of the soul to be pure and good and to do the proper thing is there. But it is covered. Just like Prabhupada often gave the example of the sun is covered by a cloud. He used to give that example in relationship to the conditioned soul not being able to see God. We can use it in this relationship also, that we're also not able to see ourselves. We're covered by a cloud of lusty desires to enjoy separately from Krishna. Now, even though the cloud is there, still some light may come through. But we're not able to, in the cloudy situation, we're not able to identify it very clearly. Sometimes in the rainy season it becomes almost like night, and there are very thick black clouds which cover the sun. The whole sky is covered by thick black clouds, and even at midday it can be very, very dark. Sometimes you have to have the light on. You have to turn the light on in midday, so it becomes so dark. But still some light is coming through. Now that light, that what is the source of it? If we simply look from the side of the cloud, we can't see. So in this example that's been given, that our intelligence is covered by this lusty desires to enjoy separately from Krishna, which have, as Prabhupada says, captured the different strategic positions, the mind, the intelligence, and the senses. So it appears to be like a practically hopeless situation. Our whole apparatus for thinking, feeling, and willing is captured by lusty desires, so that everything we do, everything we think, everything we imagine, our whole experience of consciousness is simply one of how to fulfill my lusty desires. But actually that consciousness is coming from the soul, which is independent of the material mind, senses, and intelligence. And so there is hope. It seems like a hopeless situation, that we are covered so much, that we are so much in darkness, that we can't see what is our actual position. And therefore, even though we may feel I'm doing something wrong, but still we're not able to discriminate what is our real necessity, what we really should be doing, and therefore we repeatedly do that which is not in our self-interest, and therefore we have repeatedly get born and die again. Arjuna, he confronted Krishna with his existential crisis. Should I fight or not fight? And Krishna saw in that not just the particular position he was in there, but he saw in that instance of Arjuna's confusion, he saw in that the whole existential position of the conditioned soul. And that we can relate to ourselves in any condition of life. Arjuna was bewildered. What should I do? Should I fight or not fight? What is good? What is not good? He was judging from the position of ignorance. What is good and what is not good? Therefore, he couldn't decide, because in material life there is no absolute good. What is the cause of good to one may be the cause of evil to someone else. Just like to give an extreme and gross example, but a very real example from recent history. Most of the people in Germany in the late 1930s and early 1940s were thinking that for the good of the German nation, we should destroy the Jews. And they didn't just think it, they did it. So they're doing good to the German nation. It may have been doing good to the German people, because the Jews had controlled all the businesses and it wasn't so good for the Germans, for what they considered to be their good. But it produced evil for others. And then we see all this, that we see in human society, just like here in India. There is a flourishing middle class, so much so that chewing gum companies and Pepsi Cola and Coca Cola, they're anxious to bring their products from America to India so that the flourishing middle class can enjoy chewing gum and other advantages offered by modern civilization. However, we see that the flourishing middle class are flourishing at the expense of the laborer class, who live hand-to-mouth existence, literally. What they earn in the day, they spend in the night. So certain people are flourishing, but at the expense of the practically animal-like existence of others. So what is good for one produces evil for another. But even, as Prabhupada points out in the previous purpa, the so-called feeling of happiness is the ultimate enemy of the sense enjoyer. In other words, even those who think, now I am flourishing, now I am enjoying, that so-called feeling of enjoyment, that experience of the pleasure of indulging the senses in sense gratification, is his actual enemy. It doesn't solve his problem. His real problem is the lust, but he thinks that the real problem is the non-fulfillment of my lust. He thinks that I am not feeling fulfilled, I have to fulfill myself by fulfilling my lust. But as Krishna explains, that it's just like a fire which burns. The more fuel you put into it, the more it burns. It doesn't solve the problem, it perpetuates the problem. So therefore the sense of joy, even though he thinks I am happy, but that so-called happiness actually is not happiness in the first place. The so-called, just like sometimes we hear people laughing. Now if you hear people laughing, you think, well, they must be happy. But if you hear a materialistic person laughing, you can hear the hollowness of their laughter. There's no actual happiness there. It's just an expression of their frustration. And that so-called feeling of happiness, that is the cause of their repeated birth and death. The rich man enjoying driving his Mercedes car around. Tomorrow may be born as one of the laborers who's building his house, working hard in the hot sun. They're also suffering. The rich man is suffering, the poor man is suffering. But they're thinking that this experience, this sensation of the interaction of the senses with the sense objects is happiness. It's like an intoxication, just like driving a car fast. It's often something our devotees like to do. So you get behind the wheel and drive as fast as you can. Danger, the danger of just overtaking when there's a truck coming the other way and just going inside and just almost getting killed, because sometimes it doesn't work, you do get killed. But that feeling of danger, that thrill, the experience of adrenaline, the superficial cause of that experience is that of adrenaline running through the system to the brain. That is thought of as happiness. But actually, it doesn't bring happiness. That's why we see that in the modern society, where it's been analyzed that our happiness lies in sense gratification, therefore we should indulge it. This, especially Freud gave the idea that we shouldn't have so many taboos. We should just enjoy ourselves. Give up our taboos on sexual enjoyment and restriction and just, if it feels good, do it. The hippies encapsulated Freud's idea. His dog idea. Dog does not that. If it feels good, do it. But the result is that by indulging in free sex, unrestricted sense gratification, people have not become more happy. Rather, the experience of sense gratification leads to frustration because it doesn't bring the happiness that we expect. We think, I will get happiness by indulging in sense gratification. But it doesn't happen, and we wonder why. What went wrong? I mean, you see in the TV, in the cinema, in the advertisements, and all around you, people are advertising that if you indulge in sense gratification, you become happy. But what went wrong? So we fool ourselves that I feel happy, but actually we don't feel very happy, so then we try to do more, or we try to do in a more perverted way, or we find that, well, this partner didn't give me happiness, okay, try another one. And the whole society becomes like hell, as we see in modern life. Life in this material world is never very happy anyway. But modern life, with its emphasis on sense gratification as the be-all and end-all of life, because they have no knowledge of self, and they have no knowledge of the self, they're covered by ignorance very thickly. Therefore, they have no higher ideal, no striving for self-realization. Therefore, all they're left with is sense gratification, like the cats and dogs. Therefore, this society, as Prabhupada used to say, is like sophisticated cats and dogs. Of course, human beings have more intelligence. So the cats and dogs, they have a relatively simple society and a relatively simple psychology. But human beings, more complex, make a more complex mess than cats and dogs do. And because they have more intelligence, they suffer more. Because they have some consciousness, but everything is out of sync. That they're feeling I should be happy, but I'm not happy, and then they become more frustrated, they have more neurosis, and they analyze in so many ways. What is the cause of all this? Now, there are so many students of psychology, but people are becoming more and more crazy. The grossest manifestations of that we're seeing that among children in America, it's becoming child suicide has been a major problem for many years, but now murder by children, that means like including under 10s, is becoming not uncommon. So these are gross manifestations of a society that is very, very sick due to being out of touch with itself. Now here Krishna is analyzing. He's telling Arjuna, you're out of touch with yourself. Why are you confused? Why are you doing things that are wrong, even though you're thinking, right? You're doing things that are wrong, even though you don't want to, because you're out of touch with yourself, you're out of touch with actual reality. Reality defined in terms of what is perceived by the mind and the senses, there's not actually reality, because the mind, the senses, and the intelligence are covered by lust, by which, paschanapi na paschati, seeing we don't see. We see everything just like a pure devotee and a conditioned soul. See is the same thing. If you are walking on the same road, they'll see the same cars, houses, trees. But the vision of a conditioned soul and the vision of a pure devotee differs in how they understand what they see. Therefore, philosophy is called darshan, which means seeing. And there are different varieties of darshan. There are the six Shad Darshan, the six schools of philosophy, which the different philosophers have tried to explain what they see in this world. Why is it here? What's it all about? What's the purpose? How is everything going on? So different philosophers try to explain, but those philosophers who are not in contact with the Absolute Truth, Even as they study the Vedas, the six darshans are based on the Vedas, but only one of them, namely Vyasadeva's philosophy of Vedanta, and even that, the philosophy of Vedanta, that is given the personal understanding, Vaishnava darshan. Only that is correctly explains reality, because those who try to explain reality, they see reality through covered intelligence. They're trying to explain what is the ultimate purpose of philosophy, to explain what is the absolute truth, the source, and what is the meaning. But if you can't see, then how are you going to explain? If our intelligence is covered by lust, then our seeing is limited, or we don't actually see what is the source of the light. Seeing in the darkness is not seeing, or partial seeing is not seeing. The example is there of the blind man trying to explain what is an elephant. One man grabbed the tail, one man grabbed the legs, one man grabbed the trunk, one man grabbed the body, one man grabbed the tusks, and they tried to explain, yes, an elephant is like this. It's hard, slightly rounded, with a point at the end. He described the tusk, another described it long and thin like a snake, grabbing the tail. Another got a hold of the body and said it's like a big barrel. They actually didn't have vision. Their sensual perception was limited. So they could only explain in terms of their sensual perception, their limited sensual perception, but that was inadequate, absolutely inadequate to explain what is the elephant. So in the same way, those who try to explain the absolute truth without having absolute vision, you must always fail. So apart from our immediate position of being bewildered about reality, we can see that this Krishna describing here about this lust, how it overcomes the intelligence, the mind and the senses. It means that everyone is, unless they're in contact with the soul, they're doomed to misunderstand reality. Even very highly intellectual persons cannot understand reality because their intelligence is captured by lust. Therefore we see that all the philosophies in the world, they all ultimately come simply to justify sense gratification. What it all comes down to in the end is just an excuse for sense gratification in various ways. Because the conditioned soul cannot see beyond sense gratification. Even the desire for liberation, one sees that, oh, this material life is full of suffering, therefore let me be liberated. But that's also a desire for sense gratification. In fact, that's considered the greatest form of cheating. Because even in the name of liberation from material bondage, you remain as conditioned as ever. Because the very cause of conditioning is forgetfulness of Krishna. Krishna Huli Sage even argued him. The very cause of our the very cause of our material bondage is forgetfulness of Krishna. But the impersonal philosophy gives the idea that I will be free from bondage to material life, but still I won't recognize Krishna. So you appear to have made advancement. You appear to have become purified. But actually, you didn't make any real progress. It's all superficial. Therefore, ye ne yurinda chani mukta manins tvayasta bhavan avishyata buddhaya aruhya krichayana param vadangata. Those who think themselves liberated and apparently appear to be liberated by their hard work for many years in self-realization, controlling the mind, controlling the senses, distinguishing between that which is the cause of bondage and that which is not. It's all superficial because they neglect to worship Krishna, therefore their purification is only apparent, it's not real. They still have the seed of envy. The seed of lust is still there. Apparently they've overcome lust by performing austerities, by refusing to indulge in gross sense gratification, but they're still indulging in the basic sense gratification of refusing to accept Krishna. Therefore they must fall down again because they never actually went up. Krishna is giving a very to-the-point analysis. What is this lust? This desire to enjoy separately from Krishna. There's nothing wrong with designed to enjoy.
That not only is there nothing wrong, but it is the absolutely right desire. Those who try to negate enjoyment, they have absolutely missed the point. Those who are simply performing austerities, self-abnegation, simply trying to enjoy themselves, withdraw themselves from enjoyment. Of course, that can also be one kind of enjoyment, to enjoy feeling that I've conquered my senses, and to enjoy people telling, oh, what a great yogi, or enjoy the power that comes from that, mystic powers that may come from that. But actually, the purpose of life is to enjoy.
Yes, the purpose of life is to enjoy. I many times told this, because I can never forget how surprised I was when that reporter in London, he asked Prabhupada, what is the purpose of life? Prabhupada said, to enjoy. I was very surprised. I thought Prabhupada was going to say, to renounce sense enjoyment. Do you understand what Prabhupada said? To enjoy. And Prabhupada said, ananda me abhyasa. By nature we are full of enjoyment as Krishnas, but we don't know what enjoyment is, therefore we're striving in the wrong way for enjoyment. We never enjoy. But it is our nature to be joyful as Krishnas. But the idea of enjoying separately from Krishna is the antithesis of enjoyment. Even though our intelligence is so covered that we think we are enjoying. It's something like, someone who's bored, someone sitting in a cell and they're bored and they have nothing to do, there's nothing to read, nothing to see, nothing to go to. Who knows, they might start pinching themselves or just to have some kind of sensation. And something's better than nothing. And it's like that in the material world, that we're thinking this is enjoyment, some kind of sensation. Enjoy the senses. But actually it's a cause of suffering, but we're so much divorced from understanding from what is our real happiness, that we think simply to have some kind of sensation is enjoyment, and the more the sensation is there, the more enjoyable it is. Therefore, fast cars, intoxication, sex, all these different things, we think is enjoyable because it titillates, it gives some sensation, but it's not actually enjoyment. Therefore, we feel more and more frustrated and cheated, and eventually we take birth again to try again. Because jnanam avrittyadehinam, our consciousness is completely covered by this lust. So we may ask them, well, I'm completely covered by that lust, and what to do? Our senses, our mind, our intelligence, where are we going to do? Where are we going to go? What are we going to do if we're completely covered by lust? Well, there is hope. There is hope. There's hope in hearing. Hearing is the process by which the absolute truth is revealed to the conditioned soul. Conditioned soul means that he's conditioned, but he is soul. He's still soul. It means by nature, still, satyaranandamayi, eternal, full of bliss and knowledge. But conditioned, that means there are certain conditions which have covered that knowledge. It doesn't mean that the knowledge is not there. It's still there, but it's covered. So it's there, but it's covered so much we don't recognize it. But those who are in touch with reality, they can put us in touch with reality by this speaking process and hearing process. The intelligence is covered, but it's not completely lost. There's still a hope. Of course, in many cases, it may appear to be completely lost, especially in the lower species of life. As Prabhupada often said, Ivor, please don't put the detour on the floor. As floor, it's not the floor, it's the mat, but you're putting your foot on the mat, so it's just the same. So, Prabhupada often used to say there's no use to speak Bhagavad Gita to dogs and cats, only to human beings. But human beings also, whose intelligence is just like that of cats and dogs, people are very much engrossed by sense gratification. They can't sit and listen to Bhagavad Gita. But one who is prepared to hear, Nitya Shruti Parayana, Gita Krishna says, one can conquer over death by the process of hearing. So hearing is the beginning. Hearing is the beginning. We hear that actually this is your bad position. This is your real position that you should be in, this is the bad position that you are in, and this is how you can come out of the bad position to the good position. That will be explained in the beginning from the next verse. Krishna has described a very bad position in material existence, coming by lust. But now he will begin to explain how to overcome, how to conquer, how to drive out the enemy, how to get rid of the covering and come to the actual position of real enjoyment, free from lusty desires for personal enjoyment, how we can actually enjoy by serving Krishna, by being in contact with Krishna, who is all enjoyment, all pleasure, the reservoir of pleasure. So there is hope. It's a difficult situation in that we personally experience in our lives, and we experience in by hearing from others also that it is very difficult to overcome nasty desires for material enjoyment. There's no doubt. Even though we say Krishna consciousness is easy, and it is. But it requires patience, because to overcome the wrong desires, or the desires that we're so much accustomed to that we think it's our actual nature, to overcome them requires much patience, it requires regular hearing, because the tendency is to succumb to the enemy, who after all has captured the intelligence. Our intelligence is not very clear, because it's filled with lusty desires. So the intelligence has to be regularly purified by hearing, by studying. And then when intelligence means we have to choose what we fill our mind with. What do we want our mind to be filled with? With thoughts for sense gratification, or thoughts of Krishna? And the senses have to be engaged in the service of Krishna, so that we can become accustomed to our real natural position. So this will be explained beginning from the next verse. How to overcome the enemy knowledge and self-realization, namely lusty desires for enjoyment in this material world, lusty desires separate from the desire to satisfy Krishna. That will be explained beginning from the next verse. Is there any question on this verse?
Somebody who wants to relate to Krishna and is in touch with Krishna and doing everything and is satisfied, but at the same time forgets about the rest of the people, isn't that getting selfish?
Someone who relates with Krishna and is satisfied but at the same time forgets about other people, is that selfish? Well, if one is truly relating with Krishna, then he sees Krishna as he is. And Krishna as he is in relationship with all other living beings. It's not me and Krishna. But he sees Krishna. Sarva bhuteshu ya pashyat bhagavad bhavamatmana. That's described in the vision of a topmost devotee, is that he sees Krishna in all living beings. The vision of a neophyte devotee is that he sees only me and Krishna. So he may be thinking I'm seeing Krishna, to some extent he has, but he hasn't realize Krishna fully and properly. So yes, the neophyte devotee is in a neophyte position. He's not in an advanced position.
What is there to do about it?
What is there to do with? Yes, but therefore we have to go on hearing about Krishna. Who is Krishna? What is our relationship with Krishna? Our relationship with Krishna is in relationship with Him and through Him, in relationship with all other living beings. What to do about our position? As we always say this, how to become sincere, how to become self-controlled, how to become humble. The answer, there may be specific answers, but the general answer in every case is to go on with the process of Krishna consciousness, which in itself, all these failings are all not being humble, not seeing all other living beings in relationship with Krishna, not being sincere, they're all
corollaries of the basic point of not being Krishna conscious. So from the process of Krishna consciousness in itself overcomes all these defects. It's not that you can, I'll just overcome being humble, not being humble. I'll overcome my pride, but still I'll have all this thing of not relating to other living beings, but rather it all comes as a package. It's yasti bhaktir bhagavati kinchana sarvai gunais tatra samasati. So that one who becomes Krishna conscious, all the qualities develop simultaneously. Of course, it may be in one person that one quality is more apparent than another. We see that among Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associates, some devotees were especially, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself especially cited some devotees as particularly having particularly prominent different qualities, just like Sanatana Goswami was known for being very much attached to his spiritual master, then Haridas Thakur for tolerance, forbearance, so different qualities like that. But it's not that because Haridas Thakur was very tolerant, but at the same time he was very proud. No, he was very tolerant, but he was very tolerant because he was devoid of false pride. Shakale shaman, karite shakati dehanata jata jata. That Bhakti Ram Thakur is praying that he's praying that I can be equal to all living. He prays for all these different qualities which will manifest in the person of someone who's actually Krishna conscious. That's why Prabhupada said that someone who's actually Krishna conscious, he must be a gentleman, he must be well behaved if he's actually Krishna conscious. You want to say something?
Yeah. Before this whole series of verses about his lust going in Arjuna, Krishna was talking about regulating your life and not following your own duties according to your own varna ashram, not imitating somebody and picking up somebody else's varna ashram. So would you like to just explore that a little bit?
So Krishna comes to the same point, beginning from the next verse, that Krishna says, therefore you, having explained the whole position of lust, he comes to the same point, he says, therefore you have to conquer this enemy of self-realization by regulating the senses. So he comes to the same point, he's approaching the same topic from a different angle, or Krishna himself is exploring more deeply by Arjuna's question that, okay, I'm following the Varnashram system, but what, even I may be following my duty and this and that, but still I may be inclined to do something wrong, even though I know it's wrong, I still do it wrong. And Krishna, so why is that? And Krishna goes more deeply and says it's all because of lust. Therefore you should do your duties with the not just simply doing it as a matter of routine, but doing it for the sake of overcoming lust. That you should engage in the Varnashram duties, but for the sake of regulating the senses, not for the sake of indulging in sense enjoyment, but for the sake of overcoming the tendency to indulge in that sense gratification, which is ultimately our enemy. One can be following the Varnashram system, which is meant for regulating the senses, that at the lowest level, that's so people don't just be completely bestial. And on a higher level, that's for lifting people beyond birth and death to the spiritual platform. So that's pravritti marg nivritti marg. One who's on the path of sense, he may be more interested in sense gratification than self-realization. Still, if he follows the Varnashram system, that will help him. But as Arjuna recognizes, simply following the Varnashram system, that may not help me to overcome my lower nature. So here Krishna is explaining that, yes, the real enemy is not simply a matter of following the Varnashram system, but you have this enemy called lust. Therefore, you should act following all the rules and regulations for the sake of self-realization to overcome this enemy called lust. Otherwise, one may be following the Varnashram system and completely misunderstanding its purpose. Generally, it is misunderstood by those who are less intelligent as being a process by which you can enjoy
It's like safe sex or something like that. You go and enjoy it, but you don't get AIDS or whatever. So in the same way, you enjoy material life, you don't go to hell. You do pious activities, you get elevated to the heavenly planets. So you enjoy sense gratification, but you don't go to hell. And then again you come back again you do some pious activities, again you go to the heavenly planets. So those who have misunderstood, they'll take this to be enjoyment. But actually it's not enjoyment, it's suffering, as Krishna is explaining. So therefore Arjuna's question is very probing, and it's brought by his question he's brought out the point that Krishna is explaining, that yes, it's not simply a matter of doing your duties. At one level, that's true. You just do your duty as a matter of duty. But then you have to understand, what is your ultimate duty? We find this word repeated in Bhagavad Gita, swadharma. One should perform one's own duties. So dharma, that means Brahmana dharma, Kshatriya dharma, Vaishya dharma, Shudra, they also have their dharma, Parichamja, serving others. Stri dharma, Raja dharma, Raja dharma means Kshatriya dharma. So there are all these duties that one should perform according to the psychophysical situation he's been put in, the position he's been trained for. That is the swadharma on the bodily platform. But the real self, is the soul. So the vanashram duties, the acharyas have given directions by which one can perform these for the pleasure of Lord Hari. That becomes karma yoga. Vanashram acharamata purushin parapraman Vishnu aratite panta nanya tattosha karanam. In Vishnu Purana that is said that one should, all the rules and regulations of vanashram, that should be performed for the sake of satisfying Vishnu. We also have that atapandir vijasrishta vanashram abhibhagasha svanushtitasya tamasya samsitya haritavushanam. All the vanashram duties should be performed for the sake of satisfying Hari. So these vanashram duties, they can be dovetailed in Krishna's service, but that requires a change of consciousness. One person may be performing his duties in the Varnashram system. Just like Krishna is telling Arjuna, at least you fight as a matter of duty, as a Kshatriya. But then he brings him beyond that. Actually, you're not a Kshatriya, you're not the body, you're my eternal servant. The real Swadharma, the dharma of the soul, the Jaiva dharma, is to serve me and satisfy me.
How to conquer the senses?
How to conquer the senses? Come to tomorrow's class, we'll get the answer. Therefore, in the very beginning, curb this great symbol of sin lust by regulating the senses. Enslavers, destroyer, knowledge and self-realization. Regulate the senses. Again the answer comes. Take up Krishna consciousness. Everything is included within that. Even if one regulates the senses, that the Mayavadis may do, they may regulate the senses. But because they have the basic misconception, they regulate the senses, they get apparently liberated, and then they fall down into material. So real regulation means to regulate the senses in the service of, to engage the senses in the service of Krishna. Not simply negative process, not simply control them. Today I will only eat one handful of rice. So you think of regulating the senses, but that doesn't actually conquer the desire. One may suppress the desire, but it doesn't conquer the desire. Therefore, Vasavajam Sophia Parandishvani Vatate, one has to come to a platform. This Krishna is recommending Gita, you have to come to a platform of higher taste. Enjoy on a spiritual platform. Our movement is meant for enjoyment. However, it has to be very clearly understood what is the nature of that enjoyment. Otherwise, if in the name of Krishna consciousness, it's very easy to enjoy the senses in the name of Krishna consciousness also. In every aspect, this after all, you have to remember that lust has captured our senses, mind, and intelligence. So we may be
singing very nicely, can think, oh, how nicely I'm singing. Other people are thinking, what a nice singer. And be lecturing very nicely and enjoying. People are, oh, you see, I'm such a good lecturer. People are appreciating. In everything we do, everything can be dovetailed with sense gratification. Even the most apparently Krishna conscious activities. Even that I was saying, one may be very renowned, but he's enjoying that. You see, all people are respecting him, so he knows. So it all comes back to the same thing. Unless the motive is to satisfy Krishna.
Then this aspect, is there besides Krishna anybody else to judge?
Krishna is the ultimate judge.
That's why I said.
But he gives, Prabhupada writes in one purport in the fourth canto of Bhagavatam that Krishna conscious means to see the universe from Krishna's point of view. So Krishna is giving us absolute vision in Gita through Shastra. So those who are Shastra Chakshu, those who see through the eyes of Shastra, they see with the eyes of Krishna. So they're fit to judge because they are in contact with the Super Soul and they understand what is Shastra. So they can see what is the proper position. Krishna is not the only Krishna conscious person. There are many others also. Most of the living beings in existence are Krishna conscious.
Therefore, we enjoy these classes because of the Sadhu Sangha. And we will enjoy hearing your lectures, and we hope you enjoy giving lectures also.
Enjoy, yeah, but we have to be careful how we enjoy it. There can also be that it's certainly enjoyable to hear about Krishna, to discuss about Krishna. Satam prasangam namaviriya samvidha bhavanti hridkana rasayanakata. It's very pleasing to hear about Krishna in the association of devotees. But at the same time, that can also become, we have to be careful that we don't turn it into some kind of sense gratification also, that enjoyment. Just like, for instance, if we only enjoy hearing about Krishna's intimate pastimes with the gopis, but we don't like to hear about how we have to control our mind and senses, that means actually that's not actually on the spiritual platform. It's just because it sounds nicer. It doesn't threaten our sense enjoyment that now I have to give up sense gratification. I can hear about Krishna and I can go on. And I don't like to hear all these things about giving up sense gratification. I don't like that. I like this. So then we can fool ourselves that we're on a very high platform, but actually we're not. It becomes mundane. That's already there. You'll see all over India there's so many famous speakers on Ram Katha and Krishna Katha. So many people come because they speak in a very entertaining way and they don't threaten anybody. Then now you have to give up sense gratification. Why are you so attached to your material position? Why you... They'll organize Ram Katha and have arrangement for free tea for everybody. And they say, so what a nice arrangement, you see, that we're giving so many thousands of cups of tea free away every day. People like such things. And the speaker will tell, oh, you're all great Mahabhagavats, you're great devotees. And they'll enjoy, oh yes, very nice. But there's no motive of actual spiritual advancement on the part of the speaker who is getting money and prestige and fame for his speaking. Or for the hearers who are pious people, they like to hear about Krishna, but not very serious about spiritual life. So we have to avoid that kind. We have to be careful of that kind of hearing also. If we only like to, I guess anyone who comes to classes on Bhagavad Gita, not so much in that category. Because in Bhagavad Gita we don't find Krishna saying in the middle that, well, my dear Arjuna, just wait a minute, I'm just going off for a little Rasa Leela and then I'll come back. And no, he's speaking very... What is it? He's not speaking Rasa Leela to Arjuna. Arjuna is bewildered. What is my duty? What is not my duty? So Krishna is explaining how to act very, very basically. What is our position? We, Arjuna, taking the position of a conditioned soul, we as conditioned souls need to hear. Rasleela was spoken to Parikshit Maharaj after hearing so many other things. And that also not explained in so much detail. So we shouldn't become self-appointed doctors. That I like this medicine, I will take this. It may not cure our disease.
Hare Krishna.